any of you have had any dealings or have your own small children, know that when kids start talking, they have no filter. And they will tell perfect strangers things about your personal family life that you'd rather nobody know, but being they're so innocent, they tell everybody what's going on. Well, one of the joys of being able to prepare children for their first confessions and their first communion is that we get to train them about going to confession, train about the Eucharist, and go through sins with them, what God is asking us to do, what God is asking us not to do, those kinds of things. And of course, the kids have to tell on their families. Not in the confessional either, sometimes. But one of the most disheartening things that I hear from children is you see how much they love God. It's obvious. They pray with enthusiasm. They love coming to church. I mean, it means a whole lot to them. Now, something happens in their teenage years. I'm not sure what. But anyway, in those formative years, though, they are in love with God. But to hear them say, I want to go to church every Sunday, but my mom and my daddy don't take me. That's not a good thing. You know, when you think back to a young couple, they come on their wedding day, and before they exchange their vows, the priest or the deacon who's performing the ceremony asks three questions. And one of those questions is, will you accept children lovingly from God and bring them up according to the law of Christ and His church? They always answer, we will. But then they don't. Now, when the child is born, they come for baptism, and so one of the things that we ask them before the baptism itself is, you're accepting the responsibility of raising and training your children in the active practice of the Catholic faith. Do you clearly understand what you're undertaking? And they always say, we do. And then they don't. And we wonder why things are the way that they are in the world. You know, why is it that our children don't listen? Why is it our children disobey? Why is our children get into trouble later on? Now, you can try everything. Of course, they have their own minds and their own wills, but if they have received no formation from their families in prayer, if they receive no formation from their families in going to Mass, in practicing the faith, then yes, bad things are going to happen. But then you ask people sometimes, why don't you come to Mass more often? Why can't you pray as a family? And the response is, well, you know, we're just too busy. We're just too busy. And everybody says that. We're too busy for Mass. We're too busy for prayer. We're too busy to have time to volunteer or do anything. We're too busy to go visit the sick, the elderly. Too busy to give somebody a helping hand, or too busy to do some good for somebody else. Well, this is why I thank God for Advent. Why I thank God for Advent. You know how we always have those New Year's resolutions every January? The ones that are good for like 3 weeks and we forget about them? Well, Advent is good in that we can think about these things. What should I be doing for Christ that I'm not doing, or what am I doing that I shouldn't? And if we forget about it after Christmas, then we have Lent that comes soon after that, so we can start all over again. But the whole idea is that we have these great second chances with God, but we have to take advantage of it. You know, the word Advent comes from the Latin word Adventus, and we say that in a different form, Adveniat Regnum Tuum, in the Our Father, which means, Thy Kingdom Come. What we're saying to Christ is, I want to be part of your kingdom. We celebrated the Feast of Christ the King last week, and that's what we're saying. That yes, we might be Americans, we might be Louisianians, we might be Vauplatians, wherever we're from, but the fact is, when we die, all those things cease to matter. What matters is that we are Christians, and that we have lived the Christian life as we stand before God Himself as our judge. And one of two things is absolutely certain to happen. Either we're going to die and go before the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit for judgment, or Christ is going to return as He promised. Those are the two things that are going to absolutely happen. Either way, we will see Christ face to face and will be subject to His judgment. Did we love God completely, with heart, mind, soul, and strength? Did we love one another? Did our faith mean something to us? Did we practice our faith? Did we let others know about Christ by the things that we did, the things that we said? Or were we too busy for that? You know, it's funny how people are so busy with everything else, but then when tragedy strikes, they come back to church, come back to God. But then when things are well again, we don't see them anymore. Now imagine this scenario, that if somebody is too busy for Mass, prayer, etc., but they came to God with an earnest plea and needed something, and God says, you know, there's 6 billion people in the world. That's a lot of people. I said, I can't get to you. I'm kind of busy right now. What if God said that to us? What if he said that to us? Thankfully, he doesn't. Because he's God. And because he loves us. And takes time for each and every one of us individually. He can do that. But Satan loves to have us think otherwise. Years ago, somebody sent me this story in an email, and I had it printed in the newspaper last year, but it's worth reading again to become familiar, to kind of reflect on our lives. It's a fictitious story, of course, but it makes us think. Satan called a worldwide convention of demons. In his opening address, he said, "We cannot stop Christians from going to church. We cannot stop them from reading their Bibles and coming to know the truth. We cannot even stop them from having an intimate relationship with the one they call their Savior. As you know, once they begin to develop this relationship with the Christ, our power over them is broken. We should let them go to worship in their churches, let them go about their church activities, but we must find a way to steal their time so that their relationship with the Christ and with the church can weaken. This is my proposal. I want you, all of you, to distract them in any possible way from the Christ and keep them from communicating with him. How shall we do this?" the demons shouted. "Keep them busy," Satan said. "Busy in the least important, most non-essential affairs of life and employ different schemes to occupy their minds," he said. "Tempt them to spend money and then spend more money and spend even more after that. Convince them that they want and need every creature comfort that the world has to offer. Have them then so deep in debt that they have to borrow and owe and continue to borrow and owe. Persuade wives to work away from their families for long hours and their husbands to do the same. Have them work for 7 days a week, 10 to 12 hours a day or more, so that they can afford their empty lifestyles. Keep parents from having any time for their children, but convince them that other people will take care of their children or that the children can take care of themselves. Make parents believe that it is material happiness their children want instead of their love and affection and attention. Then, as their families begin to fall apart, their homes will offer no escape from the pressures of life and of work. Overstimulate their minds and keep them preoccupied so that they're unable to hear God's still small voice calling their consciences to live simply. Crowd their minds with noise. Entice them to play their music and their news or chat on their cell phones while driving. Keep their televisions, their computers, video games, and disc players running constantly in their homes. Wherever they go, let constant worldly music and noise jam their minds and keep them from thinking about the Christ. Fill their homes and their tables with worldly magazines and newspapers. Pound their minds with constant information news, news reports, 24 hours a day. Distract their driving moments with advertising and billboards. Flood their mailboxes with junk, catalogs, sweepstakes, sales ads, promotional offerings, anything that will perpetuate their false hopes. Keep the beautiful young models in the public eye so that spouses will think only of outward beauty. Husbands will then become dissatisfied with their wives and wives with their husbands. Tire them out with so much activity that spouses will have no energy to share their love with each other. If one spouse will not give the other love, believe me, they'll begin to look elsewhere. Have their children believe more in Santa Claus than the Christ. At Christmas time, let them have their presents and turn their attention away from the true meaning of Christmas, and let the Easter Bunny come and give candy to replace the death and resurrection of the Christ. Let them forget his power over sin and death. Let their recreations be excessive and expensive. Send them to amusement parks, sporting events, concerts, and movies. Have them return from their vacations, exhausted, angry, and broke. Keep them too busy to enjoy the beauties of nature, too busy to enjoy the company of their families, and have them forget about the simplicity of life and forget about the security of home and family. And when they do go to church, let them leave with troubled consciences. Let them despair God's mercy and think, "He can't love me." Then they will try to do so much good to make God happy with very good intentions, but they'll feel guilty asking God for help. Let them crowd their lives with all kinds of good causes, but also have them rely on their own strength, with not enough time to pray. Soon they will sacrifice their families and their spiritual and physical health for the good of the cause. Keep them so busy that they will know no peace. It will work, he said with a laugh and a grin. It will work. The demons then went eagerly, tempting the Christian faithful, who soon gave in and became too busy for God, too busy for family, too busy for neighbor. And soon there was no peace. Does it all sound familiar? Maybe all too familiar. What good is it, Jesus asks, if someone were to gain the whole world but lose his or her life in the process? If our lives are reflected in this story, then maybe we need to stop. We need to stop and not be quite so busy to make a change and reevaluate our priorities. In the beginning, God, Him first, our families, our responsibilities to them. Take time to enjoy the blessings of faith, the blessings of family, the blessings of friends before they're gone. As Jesus warned us in the gospel, beware that your hearts do not become drowsy from carousing and drunkenness and all the anxieties of daily life, and that the day of the Lord's coming would surprise us and catch us like a trap. That day will assault everyone who lives on the face of the earth. Be vigilant at all times and pray that you have the strength to escape the tribulations that are imminent to stand before the Son of Man. Whether the story is true or not, I don't know, but it comes from the life of St. Francis. He and one of the brothers were gardening, and the brother asked him, Father Francis, if Jesus were to return today, what would you do? And Brother Francis kept hoeing in the garden, and he said, exactly what I'm doing right now. If we're doing God's will, if we are loving God and serving God, if we're people of prayer, doing what God asks us to do, then we have nothing to fear. If, however, we're so busy that we have no time for God, then it's time to make that change. May our lives be such that people can say, if this is the servant, then how great must be the master. They can follow us. As when the Lord returns, we hear those blessed words, come and receive the kingdom that has been prepared for you from the foundation of the world.